Golf Smarter number 644 is brought to you by Peter Millar Golf. Stay tuned to hear how you can get complimentary shipping and a free golf cap at petermillar.com/golfsmarter. That's M-I-L-L-A-R, petermillar.com/golfsmarter. Good golf starts with, if you enjoy it more, you'd play better. Not the other way around, with Dr. Joseph Parent.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Dr. Joe.
Hello, Fred. It's great to be back.
And back you are. I was going through our database of episodes, and of course, the most influential show that I've ever done, influential in my mind because of how much it helped me, was episode number one back in 2005, and you were episode number one. And it was because I had read Zen Golf and was so taken by it that I thought, this is where I want to start Golf Smarter, is by talking about mastering the mental game, Zen Golf. Still probably the most popular mental game book in the world, correct?
It seems that way, and I'm very delighted about that. It's I'm never complacent about it. I'm always pleasantly surprised that it is still selling, and it's exciting because it came out 16 years ago.
Wow.
And so I have junior students who were born after the book came out.
Yeah, that's part of aging, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's still, I wrote it to be what they call in the publishing industry evergreen, which
right.
Means I didn't put in, now in the 1996 Masters or the 2002 right. U.S. Open, so I didn't put dates in and didn't talk very much about particular events in golf so that it wouldn't become dated. And everything still seems to be vibrantly fresh, and I'm delighted to get emails when people say, I read the book, and I enjoy my game more, and I'm playing with more consistency and less frustration and lower scores. And those are the three themes that really come through from working on the mental game. More consistency, less frustration, and lower scores.
Yep. Well, that's the model that I created based on episode number one, was to create evergreen content, because golf instruction is evergreen in that sense. And so when I talk to people about the podcast, I tell them that episode number one is just as valid today as it was when we recorded it in 2005.
That's great.
So I've just kept going with that idea, and I rarely talk about the tour because it's dated so quickly, and people don't listen to podcasts, the day it comes out. It's on-demand content. So I'll get emails from listeners all over the world saying, I just heard episode so-and-so that was 3 months old. And it's like, great. I love that idea. So I highly advise every listener to go back to episode number one. And actually, Dr. Joe, this is your 12th appearance on Golf Smarter.
And wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and list in our show notes and on our blog post all the episode numbers so that if any listener wants to go back and hear about more conversation with you, they can do that. And I'll say that in my hand right now are four of my favorite books, and I've amassed a pretty interesting golf library over the years. But your four books, Zen Golf, Zen Putting, Golf, The Art of the Mental Game, 100 Classic Golf Tips, which I love, and the one that I'm really focused on right now, How to Make Every Putt, The Secret to Winning Golf's Game Within a Game, because I've really been focusing on my putting lately.
That is fabulous, and it's so great that people can listen to those lessons. And I think that they'll see that they really hold up over the years, that our minds haven't really changed all that much. And swing ideas and theories and equipment has changed dramatically. But, people ask me what percentage of the game is mental. And I like to say it's 90% mental and 10% mental. And that's because your mind runs every swing you make.
Yeah.
So no matter what equipment you're using or swing technique, your mind has to produce what you would like, what you intend. And that's what Zen Golf is all about. And it's exciting that they can listen to the podcast, and I know you know that they can. You know what? In the new age of technology, I am doing more of my lessons on Skype and FaceTime than I'm doing in person.
Isn't that phenomenal? So now you have clients, customers, students all over the world, right?
All over the world. I worked with a young pro in Australia. His coach brought out their iPad, and I watched him putt, and we talked about his putting, and I watched him chip, talked about his chipping, and he made the Asian tour.
Oh, wow.
So I've never met him in person, but we did our lesson via FaceTime or Skype the other side of the world, 10,000 miles away. So it's very exciting, and it really is. You know, we were just talking, and it was like being in the same room with you. So that's why, especially because they're mental game lessons, they work so well long distance.
Absolutely. And if I can give a testimony myself to the power of Zen Golf and, you know, how it launched the podcast is one thing altogether. But when I started doing this podcast, if I was able to break 100 occasionally, I'd be really happy. And I approach this show with the idea that if you have a strong mental, and now I call it a mental/emotional game, and understand the strategy of golf, or what they call course management, that you can lower your scores faster than if you just work on your swing mechanics. And a lot of instructors have agreed with me on that. And in the time that I've been doing this program and working on this, I feel like I've gotten an advanced degree on golf instruction after talking to hundreds of instructors. But right now, again, I was saying that when I started, breaking 100 was a great goal for me. Now my goal is to shoot more rounds in the 70s than I do in the 90s. And I was just looking at my score, my NCGA, my GIN number and whatnot earlier. Currently, I'm an 11.4. I've been down as low as a 9.2. My average score over the last 20 rounds is 83.8. And I had one round in the 90s and three in the 70s.
So you've accomplished that goal. That's super.
Yeah. And I feel like I can only get better now. Now I have no interest whatsoever. Well, I never had a goal of being a single-digit handicap. That was never my goal. I just wanted to, you know, keep playing and enjoy it and learn as much as I could. But now I don't play competitively. I don't have any interest in playing competitively. I just like to have fun out there and take the nice long walk. But golf has become much more fun because I understand those elements of the mental game because of the basis that you gave me with these books.
Well, I appreciate
totally
this. And you know, the point that you're making really goes to something that I like to teach and one of my favorite expressions, and that is people think if only I could play better or shoot better scores, I'd enjoy it more. And it actually goes the other way around. If you'd enjoy it more, you'd play better. So for many people, it starts with a change in attitude and enjoying it more and appreciating the game more and being more forgiving to themselves, especially, this is really important, being more forgiving to themselves when they don't hit great shots. And then they start to improve in their performance as well. So it really goes the other direction. Enjoyment leads to better performance rather than, now of course better performance does give you enjoyment, but you have to appreciate and forgive yourself first.
One of the things that always stands out in my mind when I'm when I'm struggling, and I listen, my path to better golf has not been a smooth one. It doesn't just go straight down. There's times where it gets worse. There's times it gets better. But whenever I'm struggling and yelling at myself and getting frustrated, I hear your voice in my head saying, I help people get out of their own way.
That is exactly it. You know, I have zengolf.com as my website, and any golfers can contact me about lessons through that. But I also have drjoeparent.com for my business speaking and my life coaching and any sports performance coaching. And the subtitle, it says Dr. Joe Parent, and it says helping you get out of your own way to get the most out of your abilities. So that is the byline. You got it.
So let's just pretend that we've never had this conversation and give us an introduction of how you got to bringing your mindfulness and Zen part of your life into golf. Fascinated by this.
Well, this is a story from a long time ago. I was teaching a mindfulness program at a retreat center, and a young man came to take the program who was playing on a university golf team, had just graduated, and was headed to Jacksonville, to Sawgrass, before there was a TPC there, to be an assistant pro. And I was always an avid amateur golfer, not a really great one, but an avid one. And so when I heard that here was this really good golfer, I said, well, you know, let's take some time, a couple of afternoons, and actually play hooky and go and play some golf. We got on the golf course, and he said, tell me what my mind is doing on the golf course. And I said, I will tell you what your mind is doing on the golf course. You tell me what my body is doing on the golf course.
That's a fair chain exchange.
So we became a team, and the fairways became our laboratory. And that's how a lot of the teachings of Zen golf evolved. And for me, the power of the book Zen Golf is that I didn't write theories about golf and then put the book out and hope that it worked. All of what's in Zen Golf come from actual lessons I did with people. And the chapters are all focused on pretty universal experiences. So I get a lot of emails saying, I just read Zen Golf and it made me wonder, were you in the bushes watching me play? Because everything you're talking about is just what I do.
Yeah.
And it's very meaningful to me because the way our minds work really is a universal. So I started with that. Later on, I got together with that young man, and he was teaching and invited me to join him and teach some things in clinics. And I said, what do you want me to teach? And he said, well, the things we've been working on. Routine, visualization, and breathing. And that was the basis of the start of my golf teaching. That was about 30 years ago, and 20 years ago, I started working with my first pros, and the first real name pro that I worked with was Vijay Singh. And the interesting thing is the first thing Vijay asked me was, okay, I've been out here a long time. I know all the courses and I know where all the bad places are. How do I not think about where I don't want to hit it? So that was a very important part of teaching for me. And then the other player that I've helped to get to number one in the world is Christy Kerr. And for her, it was a little bit different. For her, it was more trying to be too perfect, that she gave herself, she picked the target and didn't give herself much room of acceptance, that it had to go there, which created some trying and some manipulation. So the big key for her was a saying that I have, which is that in golf, you aim at a spot, but you play to an area. You know, even the mechanical test robot, which they call Iron Byron, because Byron Nelson had the most beautiful, repeatable swing that in golf. So they named the test robot after him. But even the robot has a dispersion pattern, has an area that the balls land in. They don't all land in the same pitch mark.
Hmm.
So if the robot has a dispersion area, certainly we do. So if you can make your area of acceptance larger, it frees you up to make a more fluid, flowing swing with less manipulation and guiding. So that really catapulted Christy to number one. And for Vijay, it was really interesting. It had to do with how we respond to a shot. And I think you'll find this interesting because I teach the PAR approach, which is preparation, action, response to results. And I think I'm the first person who started teaching a post-shot routine, not just a pre-shot routine.
Mm-hmm.
And the post-shot routine is really important because if you hit a good shot, you want to reinforce it. But if you hit a poor one, you want to erase and replace it. And what I found for Vijay and most golfers, we are unbelievable critics, that our tendency is to pick out what went wrong with the shot.
Yep.
I have a friend, I was there. He hit a hole in one, and as the ball was on its way, he was telling me what was wrong with it. And it ended up going in the hole. So we're such incredible critics. It's so easy to pick out, I pushed it, I pulled it, I hit it fat, I hit it thin, too high, too low, too long, too short. We can find, if it's not exactly on the spot we wanted it to end up, we can pick out something wrong with it. Well, if you continually pick out what goes wrong with your shot, what went wrong with your shot, then subconsciously, before the next shot, you'll start thinking about what could go wrong. What are you going to be saying after the shot?
Right.
And so you start to, instead of thinking about where you do want to hit it, you start to think about where you don't want to hit it. And I see that when people get all bollocksed up over a 4-foot putt, because they think about all the different ways they could miss it rather than how they want it to go in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
After you hit a shot, first pick out the good things about it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's headed left of where you, if you're a right-handed golfer and it's headed left of where you intended, you don't have to announce, I pulled it. I think everybody who's there knows it. It's not news. They know you weren't aiming at the woods. Right? They know you pulled it. Okay. So you don't have to announce that. Right?
By the way, I'm not laughing. I'm crying, by the way. I just wanted to.
If it's a little bit left of your target, you can still say, oh, I pured that. And you know what? Pulls actually go farther and they kind of feel good. So you can go, oh, that felt great. I pured it. It carried just as far as I wanted. It was the trajectory I wanted. Yes, I acknowledge it went a little left. But you say the good things first, and then you erase and replace. You make another swing, and you see that if you hadn't quite come over the top as much, if you came a little more from the inside, wow, that would have been a great shot. You see, so now instead of, oh, back to the drawing board, and reinventing your swing for every shot, which many golfers do and find themselves twisted into a pretzel in no time. Instead, you see there's a slight adjustment, a little different feel in that swing, and all you got to do that, and that takes care of the one element that didn't go well, and you still keep all the elements that went well. So the post-shot routine is really, really important. And the pre-shot routine, give yourself a break. Don't be so perfectionist. Aim at a spot, but pick a spot that gives you room to play, and you will make a freer swing.
So aim at a spot, but hit to an area.
Understand that you're playing to an area.
Playing,
you want to hit,
play to
you
an
want
area.
Hit, you want to hit to that spot, but you want to accept a bigger area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you will be a happier golfer. I had one player. He was a very good golfer. And still is a very good golfer. At the time, he was a young man who could hit it, you know, he could hit it 280, 290 yards. And he was very dissatisfied with anything but a perfect drive. So, because I asked him, you know, what would be a really good drive for you? And he said, 290, right down the middle. Like within, I said, within 5 yards of the center? He said, yeah, within 5 yards of the center. And I said, what would be an accept? No, that would be right down the middle. I said, what would be an acceptable drive? And he said, 270 within 5 to 10 yards of the center of the fairway. Yeah, that's pretty demanding.
Yeah.
So I said, let me tell you about mine. A really good drive for me would be 240 right down the middle. And an acceptable drive is anything over 200, and I can get the club cleanly on the ball and there's nothing in the way to the green.
Right.
I said, who's going to be happier with their drives? He said, you are. I said, that's right, because I gave myself a much bigger acceptable area. And if you would give yourself a bigger acceptable area of any drive that's pretty well usable, yes, that one in the middle is great and the others are really good, but all the others are usable. And as long as you're happy with that, you'll be a happy golfer. And you're not going to be so uptight about needing it to be perfect.
Right. Yeah, I guess for me, an acceptable is hitting number two as opposed to hitting number three.
See, that's why you're such a happy golfer.
I'm so glad that you're reminding me of the stuff that we've had conversations before, because I know that there's times where I'll go, oh, I really like that ball flight. Oh, but it's wet. You know, I mean, it's like I'll talk about, oh, but it's short and it's wet. Okay, but oh, yeah, well, great. It had a great result. It was a terrible swing.
I got to share with you yesterday. I was out with a young man. I was teaching him how to play a practice round the way the pros do, because today he's playing in the U.S. Junior Amateur Qualifier, and he brought a friend of his who's going to caddy for him, who's a very good golfer, but not at his level. And his friend has a great sense of humor. We were on this tee of this par three, and there was a lake all the way down the right side. And his friend, he hit it solid, but he pushed it out there. And the ball's on its way to the lake, and he yells out, "Shiver me timbers!" it's going in the water. I've never heard that one as a post shot routine, but I just enjoyed it so much.
It brought a good smile.
So we can have a sense of humor about it.
Oh man, that's awesome. So much more to talk about. Hey, Dr. Joe, I'm curious. You know, this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Peter Millar Golf, and right now I'm wearing my Peter Millar golf shirt and my Peter Millar shorts. Why? Because I find them to be the most comfortable clothes that I own. Do you ever buy or know that you have in your closet Peter Millar golf clothes?
Of course, I have Peter Millar golf shirts that I wear. They're provided for me by the Ojai Valley Inn and Spa, the resort where I teach.
Right, where we played once together, right?
We played, beautiful place in Southern California.
Gorgeous.
And I have my beautiful Zen Golf Blue Cotton Oxford Peter Millar shirt with the Ojai Valley Inn logo on it.
Wow. Very impressive. Well, I mean, as any golfer should know the name, and if you don't, then you're obviously not paying attention, because if you check out your closet, you'll be surprised to find that they're probably the most comfortable, highest quality stylish clothes that you own that are all about quality. Now, the reason I'm wearing my Peter Millar shorts instead of my Peter Millar five-pocket pants right now is because I've already pulled them out for later tonight when we go out with friends. It's amazing how they fit. Like my favorite jeans, but they still have style that can be worn anywhere. And they have Peter Millar's exclusive wash and finish to enhance the softness. And here's two simple reasons why I tend to wear my Peter Millar five-pocket pants more than any other jeans. They're the most comfortable pants I own, and my wife loves the way they fit and look on me. Actually, I can say that about everything I've worn from Peter Millar. And right now, you can head over to petermillar.com/golfsmarter to check out some of my Peter Millar favorites. Be sure to use my link, and you'll receive complimentary shipping and a free Peter Millar hat. That's Peter Millar, M-I-L-L-A-R, .com petermillar.com/golfsmarter. petermillar.com/golfsmarter. And thank you, Dr. Joe. I'm glad to hear you feel similarly about Peter Millar clothes, as do I, and appreciate your testimonial.
Of course.
So we can talk. Okay, I want to talk about how to make every putt. Can we go back to an older book for a moment? And then I want to talk about the new stuff, because I know I have a stack of books sitting here, but I don't think that there's much dust under your shoes. There's probably a lot of new exciting stuff going on. But can we talk about how to make every putt for a moment so I can do that?
Absolutely. And what I wanted to share with you is I have a young man named Tyler Duncan, who's a pro on the PGA Tour. And last year, at the start of the year, he just had conditional status on the web.com. And we started working together, and he got his tour card and placed in the top five in his first PGA Tour wow. event up in Napa at Silverado. And he found that the one of the most important things for him was a change in his attitude about putting, and that was how to make every putt. And the important distinction there is I use a different language than most of golf. And, you know, they're even talking about if you watch a broadcast, they say they now broadcast and post the make percentage. So you, right. you see a 40-foot putt, and it's a 4% or 3% make percentage. And that's pretty discouraging.
yes, fact, it is.
In fact, if you're a PGA Tour player, you're 8 feet away and your make percentage is 50 or 60%. That means you're going to miss four or five out of 10 putts. And that doesn't sound like, you know, that doesn't sound very good. So I want to change the language. In traditional golf language, which conventional golf language, let's say, making a putt means the ball going in the hole. And I want to change that. The ball going in the hole is holing a putt. You make the putt if you rolled the putt you really wanted. If you got it started with a good roll on the line you wanted, at the pace you wanted, you made your putt because that's all you can control. They don't let you pick the ball up and place it in the hole. They don't let you put the putter straight behind the ball and then shovel it all the way until it gets in. You can't get the ball in the hole. You can only get the ball started. So I change the attitude of the players that I work with. I ask them, what's your job in putting? They say to get the ball in the hole. And I said, no, that's not your job. That's the ball's job. The ball's job is to find the hole. Your job is to give the ball a good start at that. So you get it started rolling. That's the area that you can control. And then all you can do is root for it. And it changes the attitude that people have, and it changes their confidence. So one pro that I worked with who adopted this language called me after he shot his first 63 on the PGA Tour, his first lead after the first round of a PGA Tour event. And he said, Doc, I made 16 out of 18 of my first putts, and I hold 9 of them.
There you go.
Now, which makes you seem like a better golfer? And because you hear it as well, which makes you feel like a better golfer when you can say, I made 16 out of 18, or I missed 9 of my first putts?
Oh, made.
Right. Exactly. I made 16 out of 18 rather than, you know, I made 9 and I missed 9. That sounds kind of so-so.
Yeah.
Yet he shot a 63. And in conventional golf language, he made 9 of his first putts and he missed 9 of his first putts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Changing the whole attitude.
My friend who actually, you know him, John, who he and I play together once or twice almost every week now. And he's an old friend of yours and student of yours as well. And we say that line frequently. Oh, I made the putt. I just didn't hole it. Yeah, exactly. You made the putt. You just didn't hole it.
Exactly. And it takes the pressure off of you because, all you have to do is your job. And then you do the best you can and see what happens.
Yeah.
And in fact, Mr. Nicholas, maybe the best golfer in history, someone he was saying he never missed a clutch putt for all the marbles on the 18th, you know, and this one person said, wait a minute, Jack, I was there. It was so-and-so and you missed. And he said, no, I made the putt. The ball missed the hole.
Right.
And so it's this, it's that kind of attitude. And when Tiger was playing his best, they asked him, you know, after he holed a clutch putt at Torrey Pines to make the playoff for the U.S. Open Championship, his last major championship in 2008, they said, how do you make those clutch putts? And he said, I read it the best I can. I get the sense of the pace the best I can. I put as good a roll on it as I can, and then I see what happens. Mm-hmm. And that attitude is going to help you putt your best.
I think that's part of why I love having you on the show as well. You're the most quotable guest I've ever had. I mean, I love life and bumper stickers. If I can condense it to a headline type of thing, and you throw those out like they're popcorn at a movie theater. I mean, it's amazing how often you come up with these great lines.
Well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, I had great teachers in the mindfulness tradition. And part of what they taught me was you have to condense it into the essence. And if you can communicate the essence, people can figure it all out from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to share with you something that I'm a brand ambassador for.
What's that?
That really condenses things to the essence. And they're called shoe tips.
What?
The shoe? Word shoe tips.
Shoe tips. Okay.
And they've got a website, shoetipsgolf.com, but they are clips that you slide a label into.
Okay.
That clip onto the bottom rung of your laces, and they're the last thing that you see before you set up. And on these labels are printed wonderful Zen golf keys like smooth or breathe and focus, soft hands, back and through, tempo, and my favorite, commit and trust.
Ugh.
Now, all they're printed on these little labels. And so for me, I look down, I see them there printed out right on my shoes.
So when you're looking down at the ball, you can read them?
Well, what I like to do is I look at them during my practice swing, and it reminds me of my keys. And then I put those keys in my programming swing. That's what I like to call a practice swing, my programming swing.
Okay.
And then I step up, and as I'm taking my last breath over the ball, they might catch my eye and remind me again. But I've already got them in mind from the practice swing, and there they are, and they're on my feet, and they're walking with me. So they're wherever I go. And there's also a bag tag that you can clip these tips on. And so you can take your favorite Zen golf tips and put them on. And what I like is on if I have a swing key for my back swing, like smooth, I'll put that on my right. I'm a right-handed golfer. I put that on my right shoe,
uh-huh.
And then I want to get to a good finish, so I put the word finish on my left shoe, and now I have back and through, and that really, I always find that balance helps me a lot. So they're really great, because, you know, I met the guy who invented these, and he said, I used so much from Zen Golf.
Oh, wow.
to choose the tips that I put on the labels. And this is really about helping you with your mental game. And it's a playing aid. It's legal to have on your shoes during a round and during a tournament. So you like having a little Zen Golf caddy along with you. And the cool thing about them is the back of each tip is white, so you can write in with a Sharpie or indelible marker if there's a swing key that you have in mind that isn't in the pre-printed collection. So it's got infinite flexibility, and you know what he was telling me was he loved Zen Golf, but it was impractical to have the book out there and flip through and find the dog-eared page before each shot that was the key that he wanted. So he extracted a lot of these tips and put them in one or two words or a short phrase. And so they could be there. All they had to do was look down, and there they are. So it's instead of having the Zen Golf book at your fingertips, you have your Zen Golf tips at your shoe tips.
You've been practicing that one. And are they easy to change? Because I think that, you know, I would have a different swing tip for my drive than I would for my putting. So can I change it while I'm walking towards the hole?
Well, you don't want to change it while you're walking or you fall down. But yeah. While you're waiting for somebody to play their second shot, yeah, it's completely legal slip one in and slip one out and the other one back in. And they're very easy. You know, they're clips and they clip easily onto your laces, but then the labels are even easier to slip in and out. So you can change them whenever you need to.
And I love the idea of being able to write your own stuff, because, of course, I would always write, never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot. A listener told me that one, and I'll never, ever, ever forget it.
You're going to have to write it small, but it will definitely fit in there.
Absolutely. ShoeTipsGolf.com is where we can find those. Yes. I think that's a brilliant idea.
I'm on Amazon. You just go to Amazon and type in shoe tips, and they will show up. And it's, you know, they're really, really fun, and they really, really do work. You know, yesterday I was going out, and I was having a little trouble with my irons. And I remembered a key that I use to teach people to get their sequencing right. And it's actually something in the 1950s Ben Hogan book. There's an illustration of him throwing a ball sidearm, but it's essentially the same as skipping a rock. A sidearm throw, when you skip a rock, your legs start the action, your hips clear, your right elbow comes in close to your side, and you turn through. And so what I did was I wrote skip a rock on one of my shoe tips, and it reminded me that as my practice swing, without a club, I just made the motion of skipping a rock and got that feel programmed in. And I think yesterday I hit better iron shots than I have in a long time. So it really does work.
Skip a rock.
ShoeTips.com, ShoeTipsGolf.com.
Right.
And you'll see some tips that I give that are explanations of some of the single phrases that are on the shoe tips, and so you can watch and listen to some of my golf tips as well.
And I love just the play on words, because when you first said shoe tips, I wasn't thinking of like golf tips. I was thinking of taps, you know, like something to prevent the, you know, you rolling over your front of your foot or something. I love that idea. It's great.
That's right.
It's a great product. It's so simple, and it's legal, and it's, oh man, is that good. What else is new going on? You can't just be plugging somebody else's product that what have you done lately that I want to know about?
Well, I was telling you about the pros that I'm working with, and this, the making versus holding a putt is important. The game plan that I have, that's a kind of unique way of playing one hole at a time. Mm-hmm. And then some chipping and pitching work that I'm doing. But what's been really exciting is a family project that I'm working on.
Well, what's that?
And that is Disney Publications. My sister has written and edited children's books for them for years. Uh-huh. And one of the editors knew our family, and she knew that I taught mindfulness. And she asked if my sister and I would like to write a book on mindfulness using Winnie the Pooh and the characters from the Hundred Acre Wood to convey mindfulness to both adults and children. And my wife is a graphic designer, so she designed the cover and the interior of the book. So it really is a family project. It's called A Walk in the Wood: Meditations on Mindfulness with a Bear Named Pooh.
Oh.
And so we wrote both stories about Winnie the Pooh and a day in his life of waking up and doing his exercises and his mindfulness practice, and then taking a walk and exploring his sense perceptions in the woods, encountering Piglet and helping Piglet build confidence, encountering Tigger and helping Tigger tame his mind a little bit from bouncing all over the place, helping Eeyore cheer up, helping Rabbit calm down and do one. The chapter with Rabbit is about multitasking and trying not to do too many things at once. Now, in each story, the stories are written for both adults and children. It's not just kiddie language and a picture book. They're real stories, a lot like the original Winnie the Pooh books. And we wrote poems that went along with them. And one of my favorite ones is what Winnie the Pooh tells Rabbit, the poem he writes for Rabbit. And he says, "Rabbit gets in quite a stew, always has so much to do. If he did things one by one, he would have a lot more fun." And then in parentheses it says, "and maybe even get more done."
Hmm.
So we wrote poems for each chapter, and there are some beautiful little illustrations from a Disney artist. And at the end of each chapter, after each chapter, are adult language instructions on practicing mindfulness, practicing kindness, building self-confidence and self-belief, and awareness of environment and sense perceptions. And so there are 16 chapters going through the day, setting his intention, working with his friends, and then reflecting on the day. It's a beautiful book. Again, it's on Amazon and any booksellers. It's called A Walk in the Wood, Meditations on Mindfulness with a Bear Named Pooh by Dr. Joseph Parent and Nancy Parent, my sister. It's coming out, it's out July 10th, 2018, around the same time that a new Disney movie called Christopher Robin is coming out. So
great timing.
It's very exciting, and it's for everybody. And the people who've read it have said what a beautiful book it is and how really, really helpful it is. So it's not just a beautiful gift book. It's also a self-help book, and it's a family book for adults to practice mindfulness and kindness in a very gentle way and be able to share it with the children and family.
And like the book Winnie the Pooh, it's an heirloom. I mean, it's the kind of book that could last in your library for decades and generations.
Absolutely written for generation after generation. And I'm just very, very jazzed about it. Very
That's
excited.
Awesome.
About it. We have a wonderful review from the founder of the mindfulness program for Google.
Wow.
And he talks about it as, he says, the charming stories and illustrations beautifully illustrate the engaging way of teaching mindfulness. And it's a delight to read.
Wow. Wow.
Pretty good.
Congratulations. That sounds like a great project.
Thank you.
It's not golf, but it's a great project.
and you know what? It would help your golf as well, because it would help you be more mindful about what your feels and images are, and be more kind to yourself so you don't beat yourself up on the golf course.
Right. A beautiful thing. Well, Dr. Joseph Parent, author and teacher, instructor, motivational speaker, you are busy and you are impressive. I am so honored to have you back on the show for the 12th time. And I appreciate your friendship and your cooperation on this. Thanks so much for coming back to Golf Smarter.
Thank you, Fred. Always a pleasure. I look forward to the next time.
You know, last week's episode was Sam Hogan of twoguyswithballs.com. We discussed this. He's not a paid advertiser on Golf Smarter. But in all the years of this podcast, it's my opinion that in terms of what I can bring to you, they're one of the best retailers ever to be on this show. And apparently there are Golf Smarter listeners who agree. Just yesterday, I received emails reporting on the great experience and quick delivery that was experienced when shopping at twoguyswithballs.com. And I definitely wanted to share one of these emails with you. And it says, I got my balls today. They're in great condition. You ordered the Eagle balls. You know, there's three different qualities. Eagle, Birdie, Par, and Eagle are like brand new. He says, my other source for sub-retail Pro V1s is Logo Overruns at, I don't even want to mention it, but a place in Seattle. They're $33, including tax, plus I have to drive 140 miles round trip to get them. These balls look 90% new, so that is around a 20% savings before figuring gas, etc., etc., etc. I might do the 2015 Pro V1s next time because I really do like those too. I am happy. Great deal. Thanks, Doug from Seattle. And Doug, you're quite welcome. So let me remind you once again, a brand new box of Pro V1s retails for about $50. Buying the Eagle Quality 2017 Pro V1s from twoguyswithballs.com is $24, and the 2015 version is only $19. And when you use the coupon code GOLFSMARTER15 at checkout, you'll save an additional 15%. So think about that. That's like you're buying 2017 Pro V1s for less than $20. Whenever I do an interview, I ask myself two questions. Is this going to be interesting to me? And really, what's in it for the audience? Well, definitely we both win on this one. Questions, comments, suggestions? I love your suggestions. Use @GolfSmarter on Twitter or Instagram. For the Golf Smarter Academy, call 415-761-1498 or just email your question by clicking on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.